Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, the show for people who want to maximize their marketing potential. My name is Katya, and I'm your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy and everything in between, each episode will feature industry experts that share their insights and provide actionable tips to help you achieve your marketing goals. So put your AirPods in, turn up the volume, and get ready for our guest, Joe Paluzzi. Joe, thank you so much for joining me on the Grin Gets Real podcast. I'm super excited to have you here. Well, I feel like that's almost an understatement. Like I told you earlier, I listen to you every Monday on your podcast, which is very snackable. But before I go complete fangirl on it, let's get started with who you are. I'm going to boost you up here. You are the content king in my eyes. So let's share a little bit about yourself and your expertise.
It's a pleasure to be on. First of all, I'm glad you didn't call me the grandfather of content marketing.
I would not do that to you.
I was on a podcast the other day because, I mean, you know, the whole godfather of content marketing thing. Some people throw that out there, which is fine. They play on the Italian thing and I'll lean into it. But I got grandfather and I'm like, come on. Yes, I've been in this industry. So a little bit of background. I started in the content marketing industry over 20 years ago, but it wasn't called content marketing then. It was called mostly custom publishing, custom media, custom content, and did a bunch of content marketing publishing for big B2B brands, and then left and started what became Content Marketing Institute in 2007. We launched Content Marketing World in 11, which became the largest in-person event for content marketing. Over that time, I've written now 7 books, 1 mystery novel in there, which was
just
pre-pandemic, although the main character is a marketer. So
I love it.
That's the thing. I was like, how many mystery novels have you actually read that has a marketer as the key protagonist? It doesn't exist. It's just this one called The Will to Die. Anyways, so basically I'm doing back in the content marketing game, started a new company called The Tilt, which is focused on content creators. Got the new book, Content Inc., coming out, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about in May. And I'm at the service of content marketers. That's all I do is just try to help people stop creating insane content and wasting everyone's time. And if you're going to do it, have it make an impact on the business.
And as a content marketer myself, that is why I do fangirl over you, because I go to the website all the time. I've read your books. I've signed up for like the Content Inc. coming out in May. So I'm all about it. And I think that as marketers, I'd love for you to break down what content marketing is, but also more importantly, what it isn't.
Well, first of all, content marketing is marketing. A lot of people forget that. A lot of people think that it's creating content and it's not. So when we think about marketing, we want to see a behavior change happen. If you're not seeing a behavior change or maintain that behavior in some way, then you're not doing content marketing correctly. So we like to say, okay, well, what are we trying to do? We're focusing on a niche audience and how can we deliver valuable, relevant, compelling information to that audience over a long period? Again, that's very important. Yeah. There is no such thing as a content marketing campaign. If you say content marketing campaign to me, I would think you're coming from the advertising side and you're doing content marketing as a tactic, not as a strategy.
Yes.
So we want to say content marketing is a marathon. It's not a sprint. By delivering this indispensable, remarkable content to a niche audience over time, we should see that behavior change happen. Generally, what it looks like, it ends up looking like a blog or an email program or a podcast like yours.
Yeah.
Or it's an in-person event series. It could be a print magazine, which I still am a big fan of print. So those are the vehicles that it looks like. But the key is, am I targeting a niche audience? Do I have what we call the content tilt? Do I actually have something different to say? How do I break through all that clutter? And am I delivering it on mostly one platform over a long period of time? Those are kind of the success factors that make it work. And unfortunately, the reason why you and I are doing this is that most content marketers are just busy creating stuff that doesn't matter, that doesn't make an impact on the audience. They don't read their email newsletters and notice how bad they are. And I mean, I don't want to be, you know, mean about it, but it's just the thing. Most content marketing that's out there is not very good.
Well, I feel like a really great example of kind of what you've just articulated are businesses who feel that they need to be on all social media channels and they need to post to post, rather than being strategic with what it is that they're posting and what they want to get out of the post, right?
You're so right about that, because when I go and I'll do a content audit, I don't do it like I used to, but I'm still involved in some of these processes. And when I would go in, mostly into big billion-dollar enterprises, they would expect us to make a recommendation on things to do with content. Like, what do I need to do? I need to be creating more content? Do I need to be doing more podcasts, more YouTube videos, more social media? Every time, 100% of the time, we made recommendations to kill things, because basically they were everywhere. They were splattering content. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And there's no focus. There's no looking at that and saying, can you really be the leading informational expert over that thing? No, not when you're just splattering content all over the place. So it's really more today about strategies, about saying no. We need to start saying no to things. Maybe you shouldn't be on TikTok. It would help the world if you weren't on TikTok. Have you listened to your podcast recently? Who made you do that? You know, those types of things. Less is more. Be great at one platform. And then once you build what we call a minimum viable audience, whatever that is for you, could be 5,000, could be 10,000, could be 100 true fans, then you can go ahead and diversify into other platforms.
Well, I like what you said about just kind of strategy in general. And I especially love that you don't like the term of like packaging it as a campaign. Because I always get this knee jerk of like, okay, campaign seems like such a one-sided initiative. Like, this is what I want to do. But if you're thinking about your end audience and what they need, that value that they have, right? The questions that they're asking, that should be your driving force. If you're not answering their questions, then what are you creating? You're just creating content for yourself. And then I may as well just be writing in my journal. Not that I have a journal, but if I did.
You know. You make the point. Campaign. What is the significance when you say the word campaign? A campaign, thankfully, always stops.
Yes.
I mean, we just went through this with the political season, right? Thankfully, at some point, the campaign stops.
Yes.
And we can all breathe. But in content marketing, it doesn't, or it shouldn't. So that's the thing, is when somebody says a content marketing campaign, I already know that they have a short-term mindset. And if somebody comes to me and says, hey, Joe, I like this whole content marketing thing. I'd like to try some of that. What can I expect in 6 months? I would say you should expect absolutely nothing. Nothing is going to happen in 6 months with that kind of mindset. If you need to see business results in 6 months or less, go interrupt people. Go buy advertising. There's nothing wrong with it. But that's how you're going to do it. Content marketing is a marathon, not a sprint. So it takes generally 9 to 18 months to start seeing some real impact on the business, and you're able to show revenue, monetization, whatever your KPIs, whatever you want to call it, from that audience base. And I think a lot of people forget that, because we're still in the advertising campaign mindset of the 1970s, God help us all. And things have changed just a little bit since then.
Well, that poses a really great question on how to measure the success of the content that you have. If it is a marathon, not a sprint, I always feel like content is very qualitative, not quantitative. Mind you, I still try to quantify it by like, all right, production hours, because I really think that you need to have like this visual of like, this blog took this much time. You got to research it. You got to think about it. Sure. It's not just writing it out. Or how would you guide someone to measure the success of a content marketing program or strategy?
Well, first of all, you start with the vanity metrics, because that's what we have to use. So we want social media mentions. We want to know qualitatively, you know, are they saying good things? Are we getting good feedback? Is it being shared? So those things are very important. If you can throw in a research project here or there and know what's the difference in their change in attitudes, attitudinal research, it's all good. But they, again, they're all vanity. I mean, are you getting found in search engines if you have a blog? So that's a really good thing. Oh, okay, great. Yeah. That wouldn't exist. We wouldn't get that traffic. Can we associate that traffic with how much it would cost us, or whatever the case is? Or can we take that from a lead into a sale? Great, that you can start to measure those things. But long term, what we want to say is, who's the subscriber? Who is the audience we're trying to reach? And how have they changed their behavior? Again, back to the behavior. So I'll give you an example. There's a magazine called Think Money Magazine from TD Ameritrade. Mm-hmm. They started as a print magazine. Now it's print and digital. How do you measure the effect of sending a magazine to traders over time? And they said, well, easy. Has their behavior changed? It took them 2 years to get the data. And this is the issue. Sometimes you can't get that. As you said,
yeah.
The quantitative data is hard to get. You have to plan for it. They planned for it and they found out, oh, the people that read this publication end up trading 5 times more than those that don't. Wow, that's a great behavior change. So these are the types of things we're looking for. So if you have an email newsletter, okay, the people that read your email newsletter, what do they do different? Are they in your CRM system? Do they buy more? Do they stay longer? Are they more profitable? Those are the things that we want to look for. And again, you have to set that up with your hypothesis up front, because why are you doing this in the first place? You're not just creating content because somebody said you need a blog or a podcast. Somebody said, we have a business challenge. What is that? We want higher yield on our products and services. Our customers aren't staying as long. So how do we create more loyalty? And then you bake that into, here's the content marketing strategy. This is what we feel the solution is, creating this kind of content to this audience over a long period of time, and they will change. So that's it. Again, you have to work the numbers until you get to that amazing information like TD Ameritrade did. You have to go with the vanity metrics. And it's just, and there's nothing wrong with it, but we don't know for sure. Social media shares, that's great. Is that impacting the business? I don't know yet.
I won't know yet. Yeah.
I don't know yet, but you have to plan for it. So it just takes time.
How would you create then a content marketing framework, or is there a framework to create that content marketing strategy?
Oh yeah, there's all kinds of frameworks. I have my own biased opinion on a framework. We created something called the Content Inc. model. I love it because you could be a startup and you have no resources, or you could be a big billion-dollar enterprise, and within one of your divisions, you could actually do this. And you start with the sweet spot. What can I create content around? What's my skill or expertise? And then the audience desire. What's their pain points? What keeps them up at night? You create what's called a content marketing mission statement from that. Who am I targeting? What am I going to deliver? And what is the outcome for the audience? And notice when you do that content marketing mission statement, you're not talking about what you want to sell. You're talking about the outcome of the audience, which is so key, because most of the time, and you've seen this, when you go in and you look at a company and you say, what's your content marketing mission or your content marketing strategy? They have right up front, our goal is to sell X, which is fine. It should be. Again, it is a business challenge that we have, but it has nothing to do with the editorial mission statement, the content mission statement. Keep your sales stuff out of it. This is all about the customer, the customer's needs, their pain points, what keeps them up at night. So you create that content marketing mission statement, and then you have to look at it and say, all right, if we do this, can we break through all the clutter and actually make an impact? It's a really important question, and that's why we call this the content tilt. What is our differentiation area that we actually can break through all that clutter? Most people don't stop at the sweet spot. They create the content mission, and then they don't really take an honest look and say, oh, if I do this, this is going to break through. I'll give you an example. Type in cloud computing into Google, see what you come up with. And I'll tell you come up with information from Oracle and Salesforce and IBM and Amazon, and it's all the same. I could take that cloud computing information and move it from one brand to another, and you wouldn't need me to tell the difference. Everything is the same. So if you were going to do something on cloud computing because your customer, your audience you're targeting has a need in that area, you've got to really focus. It's got to be, okay, I'm not just focused on engineers. I'm focused on mechanical engineers who live in the Pacific Northwest, who have a particular problem or work in a company of 10,000 people or more. Okay, maybe then we can be the leading experts if we focus on that niche. Or maybe you're the first one that's done a podcast, or there's no one doing a 2,000 word email newsletter that is just the most amazing thing in the industry to that particular niche. That's how you would start the whole strategy, is what's my sweet spot? What's my content tilt? And then the last thing I'll say about it is you choose the platform. Mm-hmm. You don't go out. What most enterprises do is they diversify immediately. They're like, okay, well, here's the content marketing campaign. And then we're going to do the podcast, the email newsletter. We're going to do a blog series. Here's the webinar program. We're going to do an in-person event with that one. They run it like a campaign. Doesn't work. What works is, just like every other successful media company on the planet, it started with one platform. New York Times started with a newspaper. TED Talks is an in-person event series. Huffington Post started with one blog to one audience. Now they're 400 or whatever they are.
Yeah.
It always starts with one platform. Be great. Doesn't mean you can't promote it on social. Doesn't mean you can't be active in social. Doesn't mean you can't repurpose some of that in other channels. but you have one home for them where you're going to build your audience over the next 9 to 12 months.
I love that there is that time frame of 9 to 12 months. It's funny because you kind of want to do all things. Take the podcast, for instance, right? Like, we want to be on YouTube. We, you know, want to be on social. We want to do like 12,000 different podcasts. But I got like the greatest advice from someone, and they said, you got to do this for a year. Do it for a year. You're not going to realize where it's at. Like, we started last year, and where we started is definitely not where we're at right now. And you need time to kind of like find your footing, understand
what your voice.
Find your voice, find that rhythm and build yourself out there so that people want to hear more from you. And that's ultimately the goal, I feel like, from all content, just in general. Also, for us, a strong desire to educate in a space that everybody thinks that they know, but nobody really knows because it's so new. I look at the world of almost like influencer marketing is very similar to content marketing. The obvious overlap is that influencers are content creators, but also the way that it has evolved. Like, so for example, everyone thinks that they know what influencer marketing is. And I think that content marketing, like you said at the top of the podcast, was called something else, but it was always there. It's now evolved into something where you have content marketers, right? Like, in my title now, and it's a recognizable thing. Oh, that's what you do, right? But it is from a very strategic place. I'm kind of wondering though, in your just experience of what you've seen, what sort of pitfalls, aside from people viewing them as campaigns, do you see that marketers kind of fall into?
Well, the two biggest things, we talked about the content tilt, and you have to catch that before you go farther, because if you launch a program that doesn't have a differentiation point for something, core audience, the story itself, the way you tell the story, you're going to be in for a lot of sadness because you have to differentiate from the start. So the first thing is, do you have that content tilt? The second thing is, there's generally a lack of rhythm somewhere, consistency, You can call it frequency. And I'll give you an example. Go to most corporate YouTube pages. You go to most corporate YouTube pages, they'll upload 2 videos this week, then nothing, you know, then, you know, keep going back. Then there were 3 videos, then there was nothing for a month. That's generally how most organizations are with their content creation and distribution. So you have to make sure it's just like a heartbeat. Is it every, you know, you mentioned talking like my podcast, it's every Monday morning at 6 a.m. nonstop. I'm not going to miss that. If I miss that, I might not get you back as an audience member.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what's going to happen. So you can't take, that's content is a promise to your customer. So you have to make sure. So those are the two things. And if you want to know, and this is the thing that most people don't realize, but if you've been in enough enterprises, you do. The reason why most content marketing programs are killed inside an enterprise is not for lack of success. It's because the person holding the budget strings doesn't understand what you're doing. Seen it happen over and over again. It'll be some amazing mini magazine. It'll be an event series. It'll be a blog. And you get a new CMO in there that'll say, oh, there's no selling in this content. Like, what is this? Are we wasting time? We're not media companies. We're not publishers. We need to be focused on sales. And they'll, whatever, could be something different, but that's what you see all the time. So I'll talk with a content marketer who's devastated because they get to 12 to 18 months and things are starting to build an audience. They're starting to show real ROI.
Yeah.
And somebody comes along and saying, it's too slow. It's not fast enough. Let's spend more on interruption. Happens every time. So what do you do about that? If you don't have the company culture, You need to start building it, and you should do your own internal marketing program to those people. Let them know what you're doing, why you're doing it. You're going to have to educate them in what content marketing is. You don't have to say it's content marketing, but tell them why you're doing it and why it's important, or put a little fear into it and say, our key competition is getting found in these search engine keywords. They're all over the place. When you go on to podcasting, we're nowhere to be found. We need a presence. You have other business objectives for that, but make sure they know why you're doing it so that you're not just hit all of a sudden and say, oh, my project is done. Why? What? I wasn't a part of that conversation. Happens all the time. So you have to prepare for that.
I like the idea of internal marketing, because I do have a question that I had wanted to ask you on, like, really how you sell it to the boss. Because without the quantitative, hey, this content asset got you this amount of sales, without that information, it's tough to really hone in on like, yes, we need more white papers because people who come in who read this white paper are more likely to become our customers. Now, without that number behind it, how do you sell it to the boss? How do you like promote like, hey, this is going to get us this? Is it the mission statement?
No, I'll give you a tangible example because I had to sell it when I first started at Penton Media, this large B2B publishing company. I ran the custom media division. So we were selling content marketing services. And I got wind that we were on the chopping block. We were going to get cut all together. We had 50 plus people part of this department, and we actually were doing fairly well. But the company was going through rough times. And I realized that the people that were making these decisions had no clue who I was, who we were as an organization, or what we did. So basically every week, we did inter-office memos. So I did the yellow envelope. And I sent them out to all the publishers and all the executive team every week. And I wrote down, here's what's going on. Here's what some of our customers are dealing with, our advertisers are dealing with. And here's how we're solving some of these, or here's what our competition is doing over here. And every week it was an educational piece on what content marketing was, why we do it as a company, and why it's important to our future. And lucky enough, I started getting calls from publishers that said, oh, you know, can you come on my next sales call? Or one of the executives that had hated us said, why can't we sell advertising? Like, what are we doing creating magazines for other people? Actually said, oh my God, can you do a presentation for my team? And that happened over time. So yeah. I did that program a long, long time, probably about 6 to 9 months. And then it really started to take off, but we didn't get cut. And believe it or not, today that department is still thriving and doing really, really well. Same thing. Do your content marketing program, but do it internally. What's my business challenge? What am I trying to do? What do I want? How do I want the behavior to change internally? What could this be? A lot of times I know Xerox does an email to their key salespeople. That's worked for them internally. It could be an internal only podcast where you give them 5 minutes, 10 minutes a week on what's going on and why you're doing some things, or how do you share that with the marketing team? I don't know. Figure out what makes the most sense and you can do, and you have the time to do something really, really good. But We content marketing has been around hundreds of years.
Yeah.
But still, it's a new muscle in most organizations. So you have to pave the way for success. So you have to communicate your way there.
It sounds like a lot of work.
if you want to do content marketing,
it is. Well, because especially as a content marketer, selling it internally and then selling it externally as well, too. It's there. You've got two different audiences, but I guess in retrospect, it's just another buyer persona as well, if you're going through the marketing. So yeah, that to me is, oh, that's so interesting.
But again, it's just, you're building the foundation, right? If you were going to build a house right now, you don't just say, oh, let's get the contractor together and the electrician and the drywall person and get them all together and they'll figure out the plan. No. The first part of the plan is to lay a correct foundation in your organization for success. That always starts internally. And I don't know if you're a fan of Don Schultz, who passed away in 2020. He was a great mentor of mine. He taught at Medill School of Journalism, Northwestern. He said, the first most important thing for marketers to realize is that your marketing is internal first. And we forget about that. Again, because marketing is always unloved. It's a lot of times it gets cut. There's people that don't understand it in your organization. So you have to internally market first. And then your second most important audience, that's your customers. That's your audience. First most important is your employees.
Oh, 100%. I just want to say preach. That's really where I want to go.
A lot of people don't talk about that though, but it is absolutely true. The importance of internal marketing is always.
Well, I think that marketing gets kind of a bad rap to begin with because they are the first on the chopping block because of the numbers, right? And everybody's trying to run a business. So I don't want to downplay like the importance of numbers either, but I'm always like, hey, we applaud marketing when things are going great. And we're the first ones on the chopping block if things aren't, right? Like it must be that you're not doing something right. So I think especially for all of, you know, the marketing listeners, like that's important. We hear you, we feel you, we know you. I really like that. I have another question in regards to like the internal, what does a content marketing team look like for you? Like where have you seen just kind of the successes? What are the roles that you need to have in place?
Well, first of all, you can have people inside and outside the company work on projects, and that's generally how it is. The project manager, the account manager, whoever that could be, a content marketing director, whatever, that person is inside the company. The strategy comes inside the company. Generally, that position reports to a VP of marketing and sales or a CMO or whatever the case is. But that person then guides the strategy, and then you hire out, in a lot of cases, you hire it out like you would in client projects, like an agency. So, okay, what do I have here? Am I doing a blog? Okay, I need a managing editor for the blog. And then that managing editor goes out and finds internal and external people. Like Rick Short, who runs the Indium blog, they manufacture industrial soldering equipment. So real B2B example. He's the managing editor. He's also the account manager. And then he has 27 engineers that blog for him full time. Now, how do engineers write? Engineers are not good writers. So he has a process of, he has interview. Sometimes he does the interviews, but sometimes he goes and hires people, record, write down, take notes, and sculpt the content into something that's actually readable for real people when engineers don't want to necessarily do that. So that's their process. And then, of course, there's an SEO person behind there. There's somebody publishing on the platform. Generally, if you don't have your own outside blog, you need to have somebody integrating inside the organization. If it's a print project, you've got a whole team of print people, but generally you got the one inside person that's the one running the job. And then you can have a bunch of stringers, 1099s, freelance writers. I mean, for Content Marketing Institute, we had about 12 full-time people and we had another 17 to 18 people that were doing, this person doing a little SEO and this person focused on content promotion, which is key. And this one doing social ads and this one doing social organic. So you build your team as you can. But if you focus on just the one platform first, it makes it a lot easier. If you come in like a full-fledged media enterprise off the bat, it's overwhelming. It's like, where do I start? I need to hire 20 people? No, you need to start small and then grow organically from there.
I agree. I definitely feel like there are a lot of moving parts, and to introduce multimedia platforms, that is overwhelming for sure.
That's why you just focus on being great at one thing to start with. You can get into the Red Bull Media House model later. You got to remember, everybody looks at Red Bull Media House and said, okay, is that more valuable than Red Bull? And I can make a case for that media enterprise is just as valuable as Red Bull. But how did they start? They started with a print magazine. That's it. The Red Bull Media House was a print magazine that you picked up at Formula One races. And then it became a full-fledged magazine where they sent to customers. And now it's they've got entertainment contracts and content syndication deals. And it's unbelievable. That took 15 years.
The marathon. Right? Everything goes back to the marathon.
And now it's profitable, by the way. And that's another thing that a lot of people forget about, because when you start this process, then you get to an audience and then you correctly diversify and you build into this enterprise, the content marketing group probably becomes profitable in and of itself. If you look at Cleveland Clinic, the hospital, they have their content marketing group. They drive direct revenue that pays for everyone on the team. That's a great way not to get cut, because you're not an expense.
Yeah, bring in all of those examples, you know, really do that internal marketing so that you don't get cut, so that people know that there's a reason, there's a method behind the madness. Yeah, that's so incredibly true. Like, there are such great examples. And I think that it is really key to understand and educate other people internally and externally that it does take time. And Red Bull is such a great example, because you're right, that was not an overnight success. Mm-hmm. Like, it definitely takes time. They've always been successful in what they're doing, but I like that they own their success at every step of the process and are very strategic and methodical with what they're going to do next and how they're going to do it. And they want to do it well. And I think that that's really important for marketing, content marketing, the whole nine yards.
They used to haul, that marketing team hauled a Heidelberg press to the tracks.
That's
so
insane.
They could print the variable content. And as soon as people left, they could hand it to them. So talk about crazy, right? That's like, what? So it's really, and of course now today it's amazing. So start small.
start small. I won't take too much more of your time, but I do have this question that I want to ask you, because you are an expert and I would love to hear from you what you identify are some just kind of hurdles that content marketers have to overcome and maybe how they can overcome some of those challenges?
The challenges we talk, I think most of it can be solved if you do the internal marketing correctly. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking, I don't know if this is a challenge or not, but this is what I see happening from a skill set from content marketers. Mm-hmm. If you said, Joe, what's the most important skill in the future that a content marketer needs to be successful? You're not going to guess what it is. It's understanding acquisitions. That's the number one thing that I see. It's happening right now. And we're seeing it in the news where you see the HubSpot just bought The Hustle. Salesforce just bought CMO.com. You're seeing it happen where you're seeing enterprises purchase. And the problem is you've got content marketers that aren't thinking about this and they don't understand the process. But if you come from publishing, so I was lucky to come from publishing, publishers never create content first. They always say, is there one already available? Is somebody already doing this? Is there an audience already been developed so I don't have to wait 12 to 18 months?
Yeah.
And I can spend some upfront cash, and most corporations right now are flush with cash. So what can we do here? So understand the acquisition model. My friend's podcast just got purchased 2 days ago by an enterprise. We're seeing it over and over again. So you should have, if you're a content marketer, you should have your cheat sheet of where my audience is hanging out. And here's some of those key influencers, bloggers, podcasters, whatever, that have built audiences. And you should make nice with those people. And you should figure out a way to either do partnerships with them or maybe sometimes purchase some of those. Because 2022, they're already seeing it in 21. This is going to get greater in 22, 23. If you can come to the table in your organization and say you understand the process of acquisitions, which we talk about. Two chapters about this in the new book, Content Inc., because I don't think content marketers understand anything about valuations of content marketing enterprises. They don't. They just don't know. So we have to understand that, because that is here and now and it's happening. And if you don't see it happening, then you need to start looking around.
Agreed. And that almost takes a little bit of the prediction time. Or what else do you see as from content marketing? How do you see it evolving in the next 1 to 2 years? And do you think that that's changed in light of the pandemic at all?
I think what happened with the pandemic is you have a lot more marketers throwing stuff at the wall because they feel like they need to be doing this stuff. And it's just a waste of everyone's time. So that's what's upsetting. I mean, obviously, we know the content consumption patterns have changed. We took a 5-year jump. It's like, Discord would not have grown like they did. Twitch would not have grown. TikTok. It's amazing how fast these organizations have blossomed and grown because of what's happened with the pandemic. If you would have asked me 9 months ago, I would have said, oh my God, email is huge. You're going to be seeing all these great email. Well, that's happening. It's happened in Morning Brew, The Hustle, Daily Skim. They're all email first. But they're so critical. And I think what's happening is you have a lot of content marketers say, email's old tech. Nobody opens emails anymore, whatever. But if you're looking at what's driven New York Times to a turnaround, what's driven BuzzFeed to a turnaround, what got Morning Brew a $100 million valuation, how did HubSpot buy The Hustle for $27 million, which, by the way, is only 6% of their cost of sales for the year. So it's a very small purchase for HubSpot. You don't think $27 million.
Crazy.
It's a small deal. For 1.5 million subscribers. So email is still going to be the main, especially with what's happening with privacy and cookies. Mm-hmm. I want to move from rented land at all times to own property. So that means if you have a subscribership on YouTube or you have it on Facebook group or LinkedIn, you're borrowing those connections. Those connections don't belong to you. They belong to Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook and TikTok. So you have to move them over to something you have more control over. So the core of almost every content marketing program is email. And I think sometimes we forget about that. Consistently delivered, valuable, relevant email, not an email promotion.
I actually really agree. And I'm always surprised how well email performs. What I think that the challenge will be or is currently when it comes to email is that so many people are also doing it. You have to be able to be unique, provide value that someone's going to open in their email because they do get inundated. I know that. Well, I also sign up for pretty much every newsletter. But you always,
but you always have the two or three that you read every day, right? You
exactly. know, I guess. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You need to be one of those. You need to be one of those and not considered spam. And the other thing is, you're just talking about content competition.
Yeah,
you are. Here's a real prediction. 2022, 23, 24, you're going to see some big brands launch some real amazing, consistent print publications, print magazines. And the reason is because there's no competition. I don't know what kind of mail you're getting these days, but I don't get anything that's good in the mail. And all the wonderful magazines I used to get, they're gone. They went out of business. So you're going to see this brand say, oh my gosh, can we reach our customers? Do we have their addresses? There's no competition. They will absolutely open it. You see a lot of people that are saying, look, I need time away from social media. I need time away from my smartphones. You're going to see a flight to print. And it's already started to happen. And so just watch out next few months.
Ooh, big brands,
big brands are going to launch some big, it's going to start with luxury. It always does. I mean, automotives and the Walmarts and of the Targets of the world, they've been doing it forever. I mean, Amazon had a huge print catalog before holiday season. Those things will continue, but you're going to start to see the consistent print magazines come out of the woodwork pretty soon.
Man, I love that prediction. I'm a big fan of like in your hands, like printing and writing on all of those things. But sometimes I'm a little bit more old school when it comes to that. Like I want to smell the book.
Well, plus it's for lean back technology. You're not looking, you're not necessarily looking for an answer to a specific question. You're looking for the questions to come in front of you. And that's what print does.
You pique the curiosity.
Yes.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for joining me today. It took a little bit more than I had intended, but I can't give it back now.
That's my fault because I don't know when to shut up. I just keep talking.
No, I love it. I could probably talk to you for much longer. So I don't know, maybe a second podcast.
We could do a prediction follow-up in 6 months and see who's launching print magazines.
Yeah, there you go. What have you seen? I'll bring my printed magazine. Thank you so much again for joining me.
Oh, it's great to be here. We can't wait till the next time.
So excited to have one of my favorite authors on the show for this episode. During this episode, we talked all things content, from what content marketing is and what it's not. He shared some great advice on how to set up the framework for your content marketing strategy to help you achieve your content mission statement. Yes, you should have a content mission statement as a key element to your overall strategy, and also provided insight on the need for internal marketing so that people know what you're doing, why you're doing it, and how it can affect everyone within the organization. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Give us some stars. I wouldn't mind 5 of them. And leave us a review. If you're interested in learning more about Grin, visit our website at grin.co. That's grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.